Hey there, it's Carolyn. Before we start today's podcast, I wanted to tell you about a brand new challenge that we have starting over in the Homestead Kitchen membership really soon. This one is all about making your very own herbal oils and culinary oils and cosmetic oils and turning them into salves and balms for your herbal medicine cabinet. If you're interested in joining me for the Herbal Oils and Salves Challenge, then go to homesteadingfamily.com/podcast-herbal-oils. Again, that's homesteadingfamily.com/podcast-herbal-oils.
Hey guys, this is Josh.
And Carolyn.
With Homesteading Family, and welcome to this week's episode of the Pantry Chat, Food for Thought.
This week, we are talking about some of our top parenting principles.
Wow.
It's kind of a different topic for us a little bit.
Top 10? Yeah, we've covered this a bit, but yes. I don't know if we've covered it here, but...
For us, the old-fashioned wisdom is really important, and it has served us really well. So we're going to be sharing some of our guiding principles that we've used in parenting that have really been helpful for us.
Absolutely. And certainly helpful on the homestead.
Yes.
But even if you're not on the homestead, I think you guys can judge that we bring some value to child raising in general, even if you're not on the homestead. So let us know what you think.
Absolutely. Okay, but first some chit chat.
Yeah, what's up with you? What's going on?
The weather's kind of fluctuating. We're in and out of snow, rain, slush, sun, like it's kind of doing all this stuff. So when we have chances, we're running outside and like prepping garden beds and getting ready for things. And the transplants are getting really close. The first round, the seeds that we started are getting ready to go outside under some hoops because we're not anywhere near frost-free yet. We have until June 1st before we're frost-free. But what I'm really working on right now is wrapping up the writing of my freeze-drying book.
That's right.
That comes out in September through Homestead Living Publishers, and I'm really excited about that. It is going to be a phenomenal book. I'm writing the book that I want to have next to me when I'm freeze-drying.
Yeah.
And it's exciting.
It is very, very exciting.
Yeah.
I'm not the freeze-dryer in the house, but it's an amazing book. It's going to be the book. Which I think is funny, and I say that, and people laugh because there's a lot of books. Like, you can find these freeze-drying books, and they say, this is the last book you'll ever need.
Right.
And honestly, it's kind of a joke.
Right.
This is no joke.
Well, that's nice.
Well, if you know Carolyn, when she puts her mind and heart to researching and bringing information out, it is going to be detailed. It's going to be thorough. It's going to be high quality. And it's going to be good.
Yeah. It's exciting, but it is taking a lot of time right now and a lot of focus on getting it wrapped up. I have about 2 more weeks until the manuscript is due to the publisher. It's the first time I've ever worked with a publisher, so it's my first actual published book.
Mm-hmm.
And, there's been photo shoots and all these things going on in the background for this, and it's been a very interesting new experience for me. So I'm trying not to feel stressed about getting it turned in and trying not to, like, work on the weekends and stuff like that. But, it has been a big project.
You're doing great. You're doing great. It's going to be wonderful.
On a good timeline.
Yeah, and it's coming along really good.
What about you? What have you been up to?
Oh, man, just kind of getting ready for spring to explode. And do you get that feeling, that feeling? Like, it just inside, it just starts, it's like everything's about to just, like, boom, take off. So I'm in that little bit of anxiety right now. I'm kind of walking around the property, observing, thinking about this project and that project and the garden, which I haven't even gotten into yet because the snow just melted. So a lot of mental space, but on the edge of realizing, like, I feel like, you're at the horse races, you know, and you're waiting, and the gates open, and boom, and everybody's off and running. It feels like that's about to happen.
Yeah.
So just kind of prepping for that, and we're clearing some land. I can't say I've been actually doing a lot of that, but my son Connor and another guy is clearing land, and they've they've cleared nearly 10 acres in the last couple of weeks.
This is really exciting because this is opening up a lot of pasture space for us.
Yeah, we've got 40 acres, but only about 3.5 in pasture right now. And a lot of degraded woods, small, dense, thick, just kind of trashy woods.
Yeah, it's been logged multiple times over the years.
And we had, when Joel Salatin was up last year, we went and looked at it together. Mm-hmm. And he got really excited, got me excited about converting that area into some good pasture land. So that's the big project at the moment, and it's a big visual change, so it's really exciting.
Yeah, that is really exciting. Hey, before we jump into the question of the day, we want to tell you about our sponsor for today. So today's sponsor for our podcast is American Blossom Linens. They have amazing all U.S. grown and processed and made linens for your house. And it's just a company we can really get behind. We actually use their sheets.
Cotton linens, right?
Cotton linens, mostly.
I don't know if they do anything else.
No, cotton. Cotton. Yeah. So sheets, towels, we use both of them here, and they are absolutely amazing and are going to last for a really long time, which we know not only because of our own experience, but they also offer a 2-year risk-free trial. And if you use the coupon code HOMESTEADINGFAMILY, all one word, you're going to get 20% off your order. That's a big number, so that's pretty exciting.
Thank you, American Blossom.
Yeah, it's exciting.
So you guys check that out. Get them up on it.
Okay.
All right, question of the day. Tackle this one for you first. Cassandra Fix on beeswax wraps. Wow, that's going back
a
ways.
That's an older
video. How many times can they be used and washed before needing to redo the wax?
I do not have a number for you because that actually depends on a lot of things. Like how much wax did you put down to begin with? How you use it, how you're washing it, all of that sort of thing. But the good news is that when you need to, you can absolutely redo it. And it's really simple. In fact, a lot of times what happens with beeswax wraps is that they end up losing wax from just one area, like especially if you're using it over and over again in one spot or one particular vessel, like a bowl, a mixing bowl or something, then that area where it bends over the top of the bowl, you'll get kind of this rim where it starts to lose the wax on it. So you can oftentimes literally just put them back into the oven and then spread the remaining wax around a little bit and do like a quick fix just to get it going again. Without actually having to reapply more wax.
So,
a really nice thing to have on hand. So good. Okay, one for you. Baby McBean on the top 10 things to do to be ready for a Rocky 2024 video asks, how do you calculate how much firewood you need?
Yeah, cool.
That's a really good question.
Good question. there's not just a certain formula, but I can certainly give you some tips and things to think about. And I'm going to approach this like you've never heated your house with wood, but maybe you're buying a house, you're putting in a wood stove. And, you know, there's a few things that affect it, right? There is your home itself and how old versus new, airtight, leaky it is. That's going to affect a lot how much wood you need. So I can't answer that for you, but that is going to impact it. A lot of your newer houses have got better windows, they've got better insulation, and they hold their air better. And so, therefore, you don't lose as much heat throughout the winter. An older house is going to leak a lot more, so you're going to need more. Another factor is where you live and what kind of wood you have. If you live in a lot of the eastern United States where you have a lot of hardwood trees, that's a more dense wood. It has a higher BTU, which is British thermal units. Why we use British thermal units, I don't know, but that's the standard for measuring how much energy is inside the wood. And those hardwood forests, your oaks, your hickories, a lot of different things that you might use have more energy packed in. So you may use less wood, say, and if you have that kind of wood in a modern house. Now you come over here to our side of the country where there's a lot more coniferous forest. Those are softer woods. They don't have as much BTUs in them. So you're going to use more. So how do you figure out what to do? Well, the best thing to do is to talk to your neighbors. If you're new to an area or you're new to firewood, talk to some people in your area and you can get an idea of the size of their house, how old it is, what wood they're using, how much wood they're going through. And that's exactly what we did when we moved into this house. I just asked the previous owner, how much wood are you burning? And he told us, and we started there for the first year. And we've made some improvements and gotten that down. It's a big house. It was expensive. But that's really the place to start, is just getting an understanding of that and then asking around. I mean, this house is big. This house is over 4,000 square foot at this point. We heat it with about 7 cords of a, coniferous wood, some larch and birch and whatnot. House that we built in California, our first home on our first 5 acres, that was a really new home, very tight. It was about 1,800 square feet, and we were able to heat that with oak. It was all oak firewood with about 2 quarts. It was also half the size of this house and newer. So a lot of variability. Talk to your neighbors. Talk to people that are burning wood. That'll give you a starting place, and then get more so you don't run out during the winter. And you'll learn, and you'll learn how to what works for you in your place.
Yeah, that's great. It's kind of like gardening or about anything. When you move into a new area, getting information from people who are actually in that area is so valuable, because they just always the it depends, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of factors that influence it for sure. So hopefully that's helpful. Not a direct answer, but
it depends.
Get you there. Yep.
Ask somebody.
All right.
Good.
Top 10 parenting tips. All right.
So I think I would always go into a talk on parenting with prefacing a few things here.
Like the kids should be up here and tell us.
Yeah, maybe
we should get Brianna up here to tell us if we're speaking truth or not.
Exactly. I don't think it really anybody should consider themselves a parenting expert, because when you're parenting, you have people involved and everybody's different, right? So there's always the element that every child is different, and you have to, just like any relationship, your parenting changes with each child, and it should change with each child.
To a certain degree, right.
So while we have that element of any relationship, there are some guiding principles that we have that have really helped us to kind of have the framework for parenting, and it's worked out pretty well for us.
Well, and I'll say, we're still parents. It's not like we've ended the journey and looked back and gone, okay, well, that went good, that didn't. We're happy with where we're at. We've got some kids that are just stepping out in the world, and so we're appreciative of what we see, but we're still parenting and learning ourselves.
I think some, too, like with the one-year-old. Nathaniel's now one. This is a good reminder for us.
It really is.
To go back through and be like, what have we done? What's been important to us?
Even some of our older kids say, you guys don't do this anymore and that anymore. And we're kind of like, yeah, you're right. We should probably get back to that.
So we're doing our own parenting reminders here. So let's dive in.
Okay. Topic number one, slow down and let the kids work with you or do whatever it is with you. And I think we have a couple examples of that.
Yeah, we do. This is something we decided to do really early on. And I want to encourage you. I hear from people all the time, young moms who are saying, how do you possibly do everything? When we had a bunch of just little kids, we didn't. You know, that you just can't. And you really can't without sidelining the kids.
Right.
And so, you know, slow down, do less, but let them do it with you. And I'll tell you, in the long run, that's going to pay dividends, because they're getting the knowledge. They're learning the lifestyle because you're modeling it for them. So it's not going to be long before they turn around and they're the ones doing it by themselves, because they know how. They've been doing it with you for so long. So for us, this started when we were out often in public, whether we were shopping or going to the park or whatever we were doing, back when we just had a couple of little kids, and we noticed how many children were being pushed in strollers as they were 5 years old, seven years old,
or even being carried everywhere.
And they, not only were they, you know, maybe being babied along a little extra and not, but they weren't participating. They were actually being isolated in some ways in the stroller, because they weren't actually participating in what was happening. They were not walking through the park. Mm-hmm. And so for us, we came up with a saying to encourage each other, slow down and let them walk. It means you do have to slow down.
Yeah. Walk at their pace. We came back to their pace. And of course, obviously at this point they can walk, and they can walk whatever distance it is that, that we're talking about. But we're walking with them. We're holding their hands. Yeah. We're slowing down to their pace in those places where we can. And you can't do that 100% of the time. Yeah. It's a very good example of stepping back and doing that. All of a sudden, they're engaged with the world. We're engaged with them. They're not just a passenger kind of getting shuttled along. Mm-hmm. They're a part of things.
And I got to say that I think since we've had young children, this has gotten worse, because now what you see is young children in the stroller on a device. Mm. And that's even, they're completely isolated. They're not engaged in what they're doing at all.
Yeah.
And so can we just say we're pretty device-free in our house when it comes to children?
This is not one of our top 10.
No.
But leave the devices until they're teenagers, other than very limited,
please.
You know, observed moments.
Yeah. Okay. Moving on. Number two.
Sure.
Always tie strings of fellowship. Make sure you're always looking at their hearts.
Mm. And this is tough over time, but we're learning to build relationship, not just tell them to go here, do this, do that, learn their manners, you know, all the stuff that mm-hmm. we want to help a person develop into to become a functioning, positive part of society. But we need to not lose the relationship, and that can be very challenging.
Sometimes it can be really hard to see your children as something other than an extension of yourself. Right? You know, they're your little responsibility. And it can be hard to remember to see them day in and day out as human beings who are individuals and have feelings and have emotions. But it's really important to both of us to be continually taking the temperature, maybe, of everybody's attitude. Mm-hmm. Like, looking at it and seeing, do they look happy? Do they look engaged? Or are they sullen? Are they isolating themselves? And remember to always be looking back and tying those strings of fellowship, connecting with them, getting to the heart, you know, being their friend on the talking level, being open to hearing what they have to say. And even sometimes, I know you do this really well, even sometimes, you know, what they have to say is, I don't like what you're doing. I don't think it's nice. I don't think it's right. Mm. You hurt my feelings or something like that. Making sure that you are a good listener. Even when it's maybe reflecting badly on you.
I do that well. That's on me. It's challenging to do.
Yeah.
But it's important. It's important of tying those strings of fellowship.
And I think all of these things, they take very, 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 how do I say? A lot of intentionality.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to wake up in the morning and like set the intention that you're doing these things, because they don't come natural a lot of times to humans.
Yep. So. Number three, give them ownership as soon as possible. Yeah, you want to, kids when they're young, they want to do whatever you're doing. Mm-hmm. And especially like in the homestaying life, and this applies anywhere, but in the homestaying life, we're busy, we're doing things. And we need to slow down, go back to the other point, but allow them to get involved. And it's messy. It doesn't always go well. But the sooner you give them ownership and allow them to participate and have control over something, the more they're going to enjoy their being with you, doing the things you want them to do, you know, while actually tying strings of fellowship. And mm-hmm. so it happens a lot in that context. I've got an example. I don't know if you have one you were wanting to share.
Yeah, I have some thoughts on it, but you go ahead.
Well, one of the earliest ones in learning this, and this was probably before we even had this perspective, but was our oldest son. And I was the firewood. Here we are talking about firewood. I was bringing firewood in, and he just came out and started dragging a piece of firewood in. I don't remember if he brought his Tonka truck first or what happened, but it came to where we just showed him here's your Tonka truck, here's a piece of firewood. And he just started doing it, and he got ownership of that. Now, he didn't have ownership of bringing all the firewood in, but it became naturally his job to do firewood. He did whatever he did, but he got something done, and he was doing it with Papa, and he loved it. And he had control and ownership and was contributing to the household. And this was at 2 years old without really even trying.
Yeah.
And that's a good example of very early on. You probably have one in the kitchen or something.
Yeah, well, I was actually thinking as they get older, too, we really transfer even more of the ownership in. You know, that's a picture of when they're very little and they get ownership of their little part. But as they get older, we move as soon as we can from giving them chores for a maybe homestead project to giving them control of that project. And that also means when you have control of a project, you also have the responsibility for it, right? And you bear the burden if something goes wrong, not that you don't get help, but you're the one who's like, you know, I got to deal with this because. And so instead of just having children collecting eggs, as soon as possible, say, the egg-laying chickens are your job. You got to tell me when they need feed. You got to manage the egg mm-hmm. count and the water and all of the, those things. And handing that whole project over to them in ownership, that doesn't mean they don't need follow-up. So just, you know, you need to be watching. You need, in fact, I think we cover that. But yeah, you still need to watch over it, but you can hand it to them as a project. And that just teaches so much responsibility.
Well, and there's a wonderful sense of fulfillment because mm-hmm. they start to know that they're needed, and they are. But our world today pushes the kids aside and mm-hmm. just says, go do the device, go do whatever, entertain yourself, get out of the way, do your thing. That cultivates that I don't have any purpose mm-hmm. in this world, in this life. I'm just here to watch devices and go through the motions of school or whatever it is. There's no purpose in that. So there's a big point in this is they develop purpose mm-hmm. and they're contributing, you know, starting here into the home, contributing to the home, but that leads to, hey, I have something to contribute to the world, whatever that becomes for them individually, but that's where that's leading to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, number four, set the pattern. Start early doing the things that you want them to always do. This is something, I think we actually fell into this a little bit, and I think right off the bat of for us getting up, and Josh and I having quiet time, having some time to read our Bibles, to pray, has always been really important.
Mm-hmm.
But while that was, I think, encouraged for both of us, maybe I should just speak for myself, that's been a pattern that's been hard for me to set for myself and to stick by. So we didn't want the kids to necessarily have that struggle. We just wanted things to be pretty inherent. This is just what we do. We're used to it. This is what we've always done. And so first thing in the morning, since the time they were very little, we would have their little picture Bible by their bed mm-hmm. and give them a few minutes just to flip through it and look at the pictures. It wasn't heavy, wasn't a big deal, but that's just what we did before we got out of bed in the morning, you know. And that has carried through to where now they are, I know our children are way more consistent than I am, even in that quiet time, as I still have struggles getting myself there and struggling against sleep.
You and I didn't grow up with that.
We
that
didn't.
Was one of the reasons it was so important to me to pass it along in this area. And of course, this area applies to so many in life, mm-hmm. but was that I've always struggled with that. I didn't grow up with that. And but I wanted my kids, I wanted our kids to have that.
Yeah.
But we still have to model it is the point.
Exactly. We have to model it. You know, and I think that there's a bigger principle here is that we're raising adults. You need to be raising adults. So you need to look at what would I want for this adult, you know, not what should a child be doing. So we need to start modeling those adult behaviors in that place.
I think that's a good point to remember, and I think we get lost in this, and sometimes, particularly the conservative homeschooling, homesteading folks, you know, we get a little lost and a little over-controlling and shaping the world because we're you know, resisting a lot of the current culture in the world. And we get to controlling a little bit too much and forget that we're raising adults. We're raising people to go out and have their own purpose. We have our vision for life. Mm-hmm. We're certainly enthusiastic about it. We hope the kids embrace some of it. But God has something for them to do, each one of them to do. We want to bring them up to know they're going into the world, whether going into the world is staying right here close to family or going across the ocean, they're going into the world to do something.
Yeah. Definitely.
And that's so, so important that they capture a vision, that they have something to offer.
And you can give them you can get them so much further ahead if you just start helping them set that pattern from a very young age of the things that healthy adults do.
Yeah.
You know, they take care of themselves. They take care of their chores. That's another one. For us, we don't eat food. We don't take care of ourselves before we take care, as far as food goes, before we take care of the animals or we do our morning chores. So that's just from very, very beginning, either they're doing chores starting at about age two, really simple, fun chores, or they're with us doing chores and learning that that's just what you do. You get up in the morning, you do your quiet time, you get dressed, and you go do your chores, and then we gather around for a meal.
Right.
And so just setting that pattern can be so helpful for a person's life lifelong.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Good. Let's see.
Say what you mean and mean what you say. Ooh, this is tough.
This is really hard.
This is tough. Yeah. And, you know, don't, if you can't stick to it, and this is, if you can't enforce it, if you can't stick by your word, be careful what you say.
Yeah.
You know,
if
you're
going to
set an expectation up, if you're going to say, if you don't do this, I'm going to do this. And that's just so easy to do in a frustrated moment and threaten. And then you don't follow through. Well, one, you know, threatening is not really the way to go to begin with.
Right.
But be careful what you say and mean it, and make sure that your word means to them what it says.
Yeah, you know, we hear a lot about strong-willed children, and I think we're breeding a whole new generation that where just everybody's strong-willed, because I don't talk to anybody who's like, oh, no, I have a very weak-willed child. Like, I've not heard that. But the reality is, parents, you are the adults. You are supposed to be stronger-willed because you're supposed to have self-control and
right.
follow through and be careful with your words and all these different things. Your children are strong-willed only in comparison to you. You may be the one who's a little weak-willed if you're having problems with that. I know I struggle with that as a mom. I want to make everybody happy, and I want to be, oh, you know, I want to help you. And I get a little weak-willed sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't stand by and stand firm. But it is so important for everybody to know there are laws in life.
Yeah.
And they need to run into them, especially as a child, so they know, oh, you know, don't do that.
Yeah. So if you're going to set boundaries, if you're going to give directions, set ones that you can stick to so that if you say it, they know that you mean it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. All right. Number six, require politeness and respect.
To me, biblically, this is just thinking of others, right? Putting others before yourself is where this is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in a world, again, that just seems to be losing that across the board.
It is.
That general kindness, politeness, respect for people in whatever position is next to them or above them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like your point there in requiring that. We do need to require.
Well, and you know, we require all sorts of things of our children, even people who feel like they don't have control of their children. You know, we require them to go to school. We require them to do their homework. We require them to eventually go to bed, you know, different things like that. You can require respect and politeness as just a baseline rule in your house. Yes, we all run into it. We all have moments where we don't do well, but the expectation is politeness and respect. What that does mean, though, is you do have to have a proper outlet. Whereas somebody's feeling hurt, they do need to have the ability to come talk to you in the appropriate way.
Right.
That's really important. That's always true of a relationship.
It is, but we can lose it as parents. And I try when I'm dealing with a conflict with somebody or some buddies, while I may have something I feel like I need to deal with, I tried to make sure and say, look, once we get through this or we get an appropriate moment, you know, you have a way to respond. I will give you a way and make sure you have a way to respond respectfully and politely, but to express yourself, your feelings. What are you struggling with? What don't you like maybe about what I'm saying? Or you think maybe I don't have the situation right. We want to make sure and do that. And I think that goes in hand, allowing them to do that. That encourages them to then find ways to act politely and respectfully. And of course, it's those moments of high emotion where that gets to be the hardest.
That does, of course, mean you have to model this behavior and actually act politely and respectfully towards your children and towards the other adults around you.
Well, I was saying, towards your spouse towards particularly,
your spouse.
Right? And we get our issues, and we cannot always be polite and respectful.
Definitely.
And got to remember that we've got to model it.
But I think it also means we have to go back to that, say what you mean and mean what you say. If you're going to start implementing something like, oh, yeah, I think we're now going to require politeness in the house, you need to, one, pre-plan what the consequence is, and then, two, you have to stick by it so that you're ready, because it will happen. We, you know, in our house, we require politeness and respect. We still have moments pretty much every day where there, you know, somebody's not being polite, somebody's not being kind, somebody's being disrespectful. And, you know, to each other, this is not just to parents, right? So not just to kids, to parents. Your children can be polite and respectful to each other. You just need to make sure that that's the standard.
Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff coming out here. It's not on our list.
Okay.
But I want to focus on one, and because you talked about like getting started with something, like if you're taking something, you need to distinguish between training and discipline.
Yeah,
this is very, very important. If you're going to start something new, if you're going to set a new expectation, mean what you say, you have to train them before you discipline. Training them is teaching them what the expectation is, what is the action, the activity, the behavior that you want. You can't discipline them for something they haven't been trained in, that they haven't been taught. And so there's a training where you lead them through and where they come to know, and that's different per age, per what is the subject, you know, what is it you're wanting them to tackle? And you've got to train them to do that well, to the point where you get to where you know they now understand, this is right, this is what I do. Discipline is then correcting when they're willingly and knowingly not doing the thing that they've learned to do. And I think that's a big mistake that parents make.
I agree. Yeah.
Is disciplining kids when they haven't been trained. And that's not fair. And that's not right.
Well, you think about it like just a math book, right? First, you teach the concept. You know, if they're going through math in school, and then they practice the concept over and over again, and then they do some like practice tests or reviews before they actually get to the test. Like they actually do the training steps with them, and that same thing needs to happen for behavioral issues.
Yeah, you don't expect them to be able to do those math equations or their times tables until they've done all the training and then done the test that proves that they know. Then you kind of, well, hey, you should know that. You should know 6 times 6 or whatever it is, right? We need to apply that on the deeper issues.
Yeah, that's a really good one.
This is
number 7.
Be quick to apologize when you are wrong. You, mom and dad.
Yes. Yeah. We're wrong sometimes. Mm-hmm. Actually, oftentimes. And it is so important that your children see that you are humble enough to recognize your own mistakes and to go to them and say, I'm sorry, I did not handle that well. Please forgive me.
We're all on the journey of life. We're all learning. We all make mistakes. And I think with that just comes humility and realizing that while we have children that we're raising, we're on a journey as human beings. For us, as followers of Christ, we're all learning. We're all moving ahead. And we need to model that, being able, just like we expect them to their brother and sister, or to us, or to whoever, you know, yeah, it was wrong. I messed up. And please forgive me. Yeah, so we can move on.
The number 8 kind of goes right along with this, and this is modeling grace for each other. You know, I just heard a story of a family who makes it a kind of contest internally for who can forgive the fastest and get over things and like get back. You know, what a good contest, good to be competitive on, right?
Yeah.
Who can give the most grace the fastest? Like, that's such an important thing, and it's something that's so important for us to practice with each other as adults and parents in a relationship, but definitely with our children. We do not hang bad behavior over our children's head ever. That is manipulation. We should not. Let me say it that way. We should not ever hang bad behavior over your children's head. It's just, it's manipulating somebody in an emotional way, and that never, never, never has good results.
Yeah.
There we go.
Good.
Okay.
Number 9, don't expect your children to have more self-control than you do.
Ow, that hurts.
This is kind of this more is caught than taught, you know, type idea here that, you know, you want them to have self-control, you've got to have self-control. You've got to be modeling self-control. And the thing is we all have different things that we have struggled with self-control. Their issue might be different than yours. But you know, that's a very individual thing, can be. And we've got to model those areas in our life and have self-control over ourselves, whether we struggle with anger or eating too much sugar or you know, whatever it is, we've got to be modeling that.
Yeah, it's just so important all the way across the board. And it takes that, you know, looking at somebody else and putting the responsibility on somebody else. Oh, my child is just always out of control and blah, 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 you know, and putting the blame on another person, and it turns that back around and going, ooh, am I doing everything I should be doing?
Yeah.
You know, am I being who I should be to be a good model for this person?
Yeah.
Or because it's the right thing to do. Okay, number 10, you can't expect what you don't inspect.
This is important because the homesteading life, the homeschooling life gets busy. It all gets so busy. And if you're doing some of these things, your kids are going to get very capable. But this kind of goes into expectations and other things. You can start to expect a lot, but if you're not inspecting, it's going to get out of control. We still have to be there. We still have to be, you know, managing, involved, looking at the work, helping them know what a good job is, whatever your expectation is. You can't do that if you don't inspect.
Right. The challenging part of this, I have found as a parent, is doing the actual inspecting. Because if somebody else is doing the job, in my mind, that little check mark is like checked. That little box is checked. Like, oh, dog's fed. Yep, somebody's got that taken care of, you know, whatever that is. And so the thing that I've had to learn is how to help myself remember to follow up with people. For me, I came up with a system where I had every child, and this was for when they were younger, and for household type chores inside the house, where I had every child's name written on a clothespin, and then I stuck those clothespins in some really obnoxious place that my hands would rub on, or that I just, I would feel them and I wouldn't want them on me, and they'd get in the way. And then as the children came to check in, or as I inspected their work, I would take those off and put them in their home in the house. And so then I had this one or two that would be sitting on me and would be in my way and would be frustrating and be like, what is that? Oh, yeah. Oh, Johnny, like, we got to go check out your work. Did you get done yet? Because it's there to remind me. So that was something that really helped me to train myself to kind of keep track of who's gotten done and what's gotten checked and inspected.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's a challenge. I know you have a system up in the barn where you work with people.
Yeah, there's lots of different ways to do it. And one of the things that I would encourage is that you teach the kids to inspect what they do. I teach them that when they're doing a job, they're not done with the job unless they've inspected it. Before they come and say, hey, I'm done, they need to inspect it. That's just part of doing a good job. So it's part of teaching them to do a good job. Then we have to remember, part of my job as a parent is also going and inspecting the work. And you know, that's, it gets busy. That's challenging. But especially in this homesteading life, things will develop and systems will work a lot smoother if you build that in.
So I really like what you've done up in the barn specifically, though, because you have a checklist for the kids that's actually training them to inspect themselves.
Yeah.
So you always teach them, even when they're young, to look behind them and make sure the job's done. Mm-hmm. But as the kids are getting older, there is actually a checklist that they go and check themselves. And it's helping them to learn how to inspect behind themselves. Because, you know, a 15, 16-year-old, hopefully you're not having to go inspect every bit of their work at that point. Hopefully they are learning how to be an adult and to how to handle something thoroughly behind themselves. Right. And it's kind of a transition of that ownership of inspecting by teaching them how to do it.
Yeah, real good. And we just happen to have a video on that.
We do. You can check out that video.
So you can check
on
that out
management.
Somewhere.
Yeah, great. Good.
That's our 10.
Those are our top 10 things.
Those are our top 10 things.
Yeah.
There is a lot more. I'm sure we've missed a million things. We're on the journey with you, learning, growing. And this has been a good reminder for a few things ourselves that...
We need to pick up the pace on a little bit. Pick it up again. If you are watching this on YouTube as a video and you have any principles that have really helped you in parenting, we would love to see your comments below and see what you've learned and help share them with other people.
Sounds
all right,
good.
You guys. It's been great hanging out with you.
Good hanging with you. We'll see you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Pantry Chat, Food for Thought. If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, rate, and review.
To view the show notes and any other resources mentioned on this episode, you can learn more at homesteadingfamily.com/podcast.
We'll see you soon.
Goodbye.